New figures show the trade row between the world's two biggest economies is inflicting fresh pain, and what economics has to do with Halloween in Mongolia.
There's a desire to participate in global trends. Kids do want that candy, and they see Halloween as an excuse to knock on neighbors' door. But at the same time, there's a real desire to preserve cultural traditions.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. First to China, where new numbers show the country's manufacturing sector is inching closer to contraction territory. Freya Beamish, senior Asia economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics in London, breaks down the data.
We've got the impact of the trade war coming through and kind of exacerbating that downtrend in the economy. What we're seeing is that the stimulus measures so far aren't really working. The problem is that they're sort of trying to switch up the growth drivers at the same time as stimulating, and the new growth drivers aren't really up to the task of taking over from where the old guard, over-indebted, polluting industries left off.
Now, I also want to ask you about China's currency. The yuan is set for its longest losing streak on record, down 10% since March. No doubt President Trump is paying attention to this. He accuses China of artificially keeping its currency low to try to boost exports.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no evidence that I can find that China is keeping its currency weak, other than that they're trying to stimulate the economy and that they have a divergent path with the Fed. If you look at the FX reserves and behind the scenes actions by the so-called national team, that all goes in the direction of trying to prop up the currency and prevent a further depreciation. Really, there are serious reasons why we should be seeing the currency depreciating, notably that divergent monetary policy, the risk that we will see China overstimulating the economy and that could push them into this twin deficits camp where nobody wants to be. Longer term, we certainly think that China and the US will remain on this collision path, kind of an ongoing backdrop to the renminbi's trajectory.
Freya Beamish there. Let's do the numbers. Despite those factory figures, China's Shanghai Composite rose 1% as Asia shares rallied following a rebound on Wall Street. European shares are also higher, but as we close out October, global stocks are still on track for their worst monthly performance in 7 years. Now, from Turkey to the U.S., central bank independence has been a hot topic this year. Today, the spotlight is on the Reserve Bank of India as a row escalates over how much influence the government has over the central bank. The BBC's Samir Hashmi has more from Mumbai.
There is a public rift between the Reserve Bank of India, the India Central Bank, and the government that's come out in the open. It all triggered last week when the number two at the bank, who is the deputy governor, gave a speech in which he said that the government trying to interfere in the affairs of the Reserve Bank of India will have catastrophic effects on the autonomy of the Reserve Bank. And that could lead to economic problems, because now what has happened is a lot of companies are struggling due to bad debts, and that's having an impact on the economy. There is another report, which is not confirmed, that the Indian government has invoked a Section 7 of the RBI Act, which gives the power to the government to direct RBI in terms of decision making which are in public interest. Now, this is very vague. It has never been done before. No government has ever invoked this. So in a way, many see this as a direct undermining of the autonomy of the Indian Central Bank. The bond markets have been hit. The Indian rupee has fallen further. Even the Indian equity markets have been down at the back of these reports.
Samir Hashmi reporting there. Now, in the last hour, India's finance ministry has said the central bank autonomy is, quote, essential and an accepted governance requirement. Children in many parts of the world are going to get all dressed up for trick-or-treating tonight, but Mongolia's education ministry has banned that kind of celebration in its own schools. Some say the move reflects growing worries the country's continued economic evolution is eroding native traditions. Julian Dirikis, associate professor at the University of British Columbia, explains how the economy has changed since the end of the communist regime in the 1990s.
You know, it was 70 years of state socialism and central planning until 1990. And then that all evaporated more or less overnight. The Soviets withdrew very quickly, and the state-run economy was basically dismantled within the space of several months. Industrial complexes were privatized, and that made for a lot of misery in the 1990s. The recovery began late in the 90s, but really in the 2000s via mining projects, particularly one very large gold and copper project. That has turned Mongolia into more of a market economy.
Mongolia's economy has relied heavily on the natural resources, coal and copper, two examples there. In recent years, they've looked to other areas as ways to diversify. So in what ways has Mongolia successfully been able to do that?
Diversification is a long road. The biggest project, that giant gold and copper mine, is really ramping up production. So that will ultimately start producing a lot of revenue, both for the government to invest, but also for the local economy. And so that diversification is being talked about, but it's still a ways off. At the same time, though, there is growth in some sectors. Domestic tourism is growing. Agriculture has taken off, also somewhat surprisingly.
How can the country kind of balance all these necessary economic growth and modernization efforts with also keeping at least some of its cultural identity?
I think that's a struggle that many peoples around the world are facing with globalization, right? There's a desire to participate in global trends. Kids do want that candy, and they see Halloween as an excuse to knock on neighbor's door. But at the same time, there's a real desire to preserve cultural traditions. They're making all the same kind of attempts that other peoples are making to preserve cultural identity.
Julian Dierikis there. And finally, trick-or-treaters aren't going to be the only ones hyped up on sugar tonight. A surge in global sugar prices has pushed candy costs up 0.5% this year after 2 years of declines. So maybe more trick than treat this Halloween. Either way, I'm eyeing those discounted Reese's tomorrow on November 1st. Don't forget, we're on social media at #BBC Marketplace. I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.